The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio appreciates the support from our sponsors. Make sure you check out these great companies. Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. Go to sunwarrior.com and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora and new Immuniflora. Learn more at enviromedica.com. Castor and Pollux, extraordinary pet food that has set the new standard of purposeful pet food. Paleo Magazine is now all digital, so you can go to paleomagazine.com and subscribe. Also, the Wellbeing Journal, combining physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and social aspects of health. VegWorld Magazine. Sign up and get a free online subscription at VegWorldMag.com. The International Society of Sports Nutrition, the only nonprofit academic society dedicated to sports nutrition and supplementation. Learn more at SportsNutritionSociety.org. And Thorne Research, redefining what it means to be well and pushing the limits of human potential. Go to the sponsor page at OneLifeRadio.com for links and listener discounts. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Higher, baby. I know I do. Welcome to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. It's a terrific Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, Junior. How
yes,
you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Yeah. Not too bad. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Are you nervous?
No, I'm fine.
Well, that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. Okay. I can't wait. We've got Dr. Chloe Carmichael coming up here just after the first break. Her book, Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. So, you know, I was thinking a funny opening would be like telling each of us, telling the story of the first time we ever cracked the mic and what that moment was like. Or like for me, I wasn't actually in studio. I called in as a tease for when I was going to be on the show, and I nearly lost my mind. I was so nervous.
Really?
Yes.
That's so funny. Yeah. So I guess the first time for me, I was on, my friend, he was working at the radio station, and I just went to hang out with him. And this was back before like anything was recorded. So the guy was actually live for the overnights, and it was like, you know, 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And so we went up there to hang out. And the guy was like, hey, put your headphones on. I'm going to talk to you guys on the radio next. So me and my buddy put our headphones on, and he opened up, you know, turned on everybody's mics. And he says, all right, who do we got here? And he pointed to me. He goes, what's your name? Or say hi or something like that. And I just waved. And he was like, he goes, you got to talk. This is radio. And I was, I just froze and I didn't say anything. So my first time on the radio, I waved.
You waved. Yeah. Oh, good job, Junior. You've come a long way, baby.
I know. That was like 6 months before I got hired. And I was like, I was still in college to be a veterinarian. Like, I had no plans on getting in radio.
And isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So that was, yeah. And then I kind of lied when I actually got my first shift, because I told them that I've done it before. So they just threw me on there. I had never ran a board before. I didn't know what I was doing. And I had to sit in there for five hours. And I did it, but... Yeah.
So. And what was it? Were you a nervous wreck?
Yeah, I was, because I honestly, like, I was answering phones for the morning show. That's what I first started doing. But I had never actually sat behind the board and actually pressed the buttons. Or back then you had to load the CDs, and, you know, you had to load your own commercials too. Like, you had to put everything in order. And so you really just had to follow the paper and match the numbers and make sure you played it in order. So I did it. But yes, I was nervous that I wasn't going to do something right. And then when the next person came in, I was worried that they might have been listening on the way in and they were going to say something to me. But I never got in trouble. I did good. I talked where I was supposed to. I remember, though, like, I used to think when the clock was counting down and there was like, you know, 2 minutes left, I would put my headphones on real fast. You don't realize how long 2 minutes is, you know, but
I
just wanted to be ready.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. Well, that, you know, that's a funny story. And I think I've heard parts of it before, but you know, one of the things, so I've got this article in front of me, 10 ordinary things that make nervous people more nervous. And one of them, of course, is public speaking. Mm-hmm. Some people say it's number one, that public speaking, people would rather die than speak publicly, which is, I can understand that sometimes. Yeah. And especially depending upon who it is, you know, you're going to be talking to. But the first time that I was on the air, was I called into a show to tease that I was coming up on Friday to talk about floating or sensory deprivation. Uh-huh. And I was so nerved out. Oh my God. So I was at a drift, you know, working my shift, and I had to go take like a shot of wine. And then I was smoking a cigar. there were some cigars in the back. And so, anyway, I went around the back of the building and I was smoking a cigar, and it lasted like 5 seconds. They're like, "Hey, Bern, looking forward to talking to you on Friday. So, how you doing?" "I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to it, too." And he was like, "All right, we'll be talking to Bern on Friday." That's all I said. And I mean, I was so nervous, I almost fainted as I was speaking. It's kind of funny now looking back. And I never get nervous like that, no matter how big the guest is. Although I do still get nervous. And I think you do, too. We both do. But you just push through. Right?
Yeah. I mean, if I don't get nervous, I think there's an issue, because I like having that little bit of... you know, not fear, but you just got to have that little bit of, I guess, fear.
Adrenaline.
Yeah, a little bit of healthy fear of just, okay. But, you know, once I get up there, because public speaking for me is like, it's the most terrifying thing for me. Mm-hmm. Once I see people, I'm like, so I just always have to over prepare and just, you know, get through it that way. But man, before I hit stage or something, mm-hmm. I am sweating. Like, I have to wear undershirt so that my sweat doesn't show through my shirt. Like, I get so nervous.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think everybody does. You know, like I said, that's probably the mm-hmm. number one fear of anybody is public speaking, but, or performance anxiety. I know that some of the most talented NFL players, like Tom Brady, he gets performance anxiety. Everybody does before a big game. You know, that when there's a lot on the line, the more there is on the line, the pressure goes up and the adrenaline goes up. So, but some people get nervous on this list of ordinary things that make nervous people more nervous is threat of snow. I would think it would be the polar opposite. People love snow. They embrace snow, right? Well, I think, I grew up in the snow.
Yeah, but I think if like people here in Texas, I mean, we get snow every now and then, but like when we just had this last storm.
Oh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. people get nervous as soon as you hear about bad weather. I think even here people get nervous about the rain and everything too, so.
I have to say, I've never been nervous about snow in my life, but that last freeze that we had here in Texas that basically shut us down for what? A week, 10 days?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It was insane. Mm-hmm. I still have trauma from it. Like next year, I'm gonna be well prepared.
Yeah.
Hopefully we don't have to
deal with that again. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And so many, oh my gosh, yeah, it really was. But and on this list is also traffic jams. You get nervous about traffic jams?
I don't get nervous, but I get angry. Like I'm one of those drivers that, you know, I'm angry. I'm in the left lane, and if you're not going over the speed limit, I'm probably going to be right behind you. Mm-hmm. Until you move over.
Yeah, until you move over. I just, you know what? I have taught myself to just chill. And I always say to myself, this might be preventing me from being hurt down the road.
You're
so
right.
I just flow with it.
And I try to do that, honestly, like when I get in the car, because I know it. Every time I get in the car, I get angry. So before I get in, I always say a prayer, like, please just let me be calm. Because I know how I get, you know, and I don't have tinted windows on my car, so sometimes people see me. So I yell. I do need to calm down.
You're
when
one
I drive.
Of those.
I'm one of those, yes.
Man, we're going to have to do something about that. Maybe Dr. Chloe can help you. She's an incredible psychologist. But on this list is what to wear to a party. You know, I think women worry more about this than men. I mean, men don't really care what they're wearing to a party, do they?
I do.
You do?
Oh my gosh, I get yes. Before
Seriously?
Before I go anywhere, I always ask my wife if what I'm wearing looks right. Like I have to, my shoes have to match my shirt. I have to have everything has to look right. I can't. Yeah.
You're like a girl.
When it comes to dressing, yes, my wife says that all the time. Last week I was wearing black jeans, a black t-shirt, and a pair of white shoes, and I said to my wife, "Does this look okay?" And she's like, "Are you serious?" It's like literally all black and a white pair of shoes.
you're setting a trend.
I don't know. When I go out, my outfit has to look right. So yes, I do get worried. And I do ask people too, like if they invite me, if my buddy invites us over for like a barbecue or something, I'll be like, what's everybody wearing?
I'm
the one that will ask that. Yes.
I would have never guessed that in a million years.
Yeah.
Do you get nervous at an unexplained rash as well?
I think anybody would. I mean, an unexplained rash, absolutely.
Yeah, not me. No, you know why? Because I grew up with the eczema.
Gotcha.
I mean, even the poison ivy. I had it literally from my hips to the top to my ears, my lips, everything. Mm. I was just like a mess of, and it took about 3 weeks to go away. But I did not lose my mind. I didn't lose my mind.
Just sleep, right?
Yeah, I slept. Yeah, a lot of sleep. And on this list is entertaining. Do you get nervous when you entertain?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the same thing with, every night. Before
you're killing me.
No, before I DJ, I mean, but I think it's a healthy type of nervous for me. Like, I'm not like, I don't get so nervous that I can't go out and DJ, but I do get nervous about what I'm going to play, and I want to make sure that, because I always read the crowd, and the crowds are always different, so I just prepare, and then I get over the nervousness. So, I mean, it's not a crippling type of nervousness. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, because I forgot. When I said entertaining, I was thinking like throwing a party.
Oh, like, no. Yeah. Like if I'm just going to have people over the house, that kind of entertaining. No, I don't get nervous about that. No.
Okay.
I thought you meant like when I go out and actually like perform my DJ stuff.
I've got to know these last four if they make you nervous. You're a nervous guy. Okay.
My anxiety is always through the roof.
Okay. So noises on an airplane, do they make you nervous?
No, not really. I've flown pretty much my whole life, so I'm good with that.
Yeah, me too. Okay, sirens. When you hear a siren, do you get an immediate adrenaline rush?
Sirens? No, not really.
No.
I think that's. I mean, growing up in New Jersey, I mean, you heard sirens all the time. And
growing up in New Jersey.
Yeah, and I spent time in Detroit too, so sirens are normal.
I had to explain to Marie yesterday what gravy was, New Jersey gravy.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, she didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of New Jersey, but okay, and on this, number nine on this list is a gas tank below half full. Does that make you nervous?
Yes.
It does.
Oh, yeah.
Of course it does.
And that's from my grandfather. My grandfather always told me, never let your car get below a quarter tank. So I always, once it starts hitting half, that's when I'm starting getting ready to fill up. Yeah.
Yeah. I get nervous. I don't get nervous, but I'm proactive. I get it fixed. You know,
yeah,
I always
absolutely.
Like to, and I'm trying to teach my daughters, especially my youngest daughter, that never let your tank go below halfway and not filling it back up. And the final one on this list is bees. That some people are just deathly afraid of bees or not at all. What
do
you think?
I'll tell you a little secret. I'm actually not allergic to bees, but if bees come around, I tell people I am. So in case I run and scream, they think it's because I'm allergic, but I'm actually not.
So you're afraid of bees?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely.
We got some work to do, Junior. My goodness.
Gosh, I'm so bad. I didn't even realize it.
Oh, you are. There you go. Well, Marie pulled that article. I thought it was funny. But we've got a great show, you guys. You're not going to want to miss it. Dr. Chloe Carmichael. She's a PhD, one of the leading psychologists in this country, this great country of ours. We're going to be talking about her new book, Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety with Dr. Chloe Carmichael. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
On social media at One Life Radio.
Oh, my. my gosh, everyone. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. I am honored to introduce Dr. Chloe Carmichael. You guys, she is a PhD and is a licensed clinical psychologist, best known to audiences as Dr. Chloe, and author of Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. She has a successful private practice in New York City that focuses primarily on relationship issues and stress to help high achievers. Dr. Carmichael is on the advisory board for the Women's Health magazine and writes an expert blog for Psychology Today. As a certified yoga instructor, Dr. Chloe is truly an expert in both the science and meditation side to anxiety treatment. Her holistic approach integrates a special blend of techniques that have been shown to help people overcome anxiety. And Dr. Chloe holds a master's degree and PhD in clinical psychology from Long Island University and graduated Phi Beta Kappa summa cum laude with a bachelor's degree in departmental honors in psychology from Columbia University in New York. Her website is nervousenergybook.com. That's nervousenergybook.com, or on Facebook at Dr. Chloe PhD. Such an honor to have you with us today, Dr. Chloe. Welcome to One Life Radio.
Well, thank you, Bernadette, and thank you for that lovely introduction. It's great to be with you and Junior in the Mix today. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, your book is really, really good. I have not read all of it yet, but I've read about three quarters of it. And I just have to say, you know, we were talking about, when we opened the show about being nervous, you know, when you are either on television or radio or just public speaking in general. And I have to tell you the cute mm-hmm. little story that you shared in your book about the weirdo wing. Oh. Oh my gosh.
Yes, the weirdo wink. Oh my gosh, it was the most embarrassing moment on national TV that I've ever had.
Oh my gosh, but you wrote so eloquently and so humble. It was just a very humble outpouring of just sharing, you know, difficulties that you've been through that really, it made me laugh out loud. I'm not kidding you. At two different parts as I read through, because I could totally relate and I was like, this is so funny. This girl's got a great sense of humor too. So, you know, Dr. Chloe, it's been a really stressful time for everyone lately. How are people coping with stress these days? Is it getting better?
Sure. Well, Bernadette, that's a great question. And I'm glad that you enjoyed the story. The book was a lot of fun to write, so I'm glad to know it made you laugh. But yes, on a more, you know, serious topic, it is true that we've had a stressful year, to say the least. And everybody, of course, is coping in their unique ways. For me as a psychologist, one of the things that I've noticed is that people didn't have their social support as much, which is usually a big buffer for stress. And then with social distancing, I think that was hard for everybody. But on the other hand, I do think on the positive side, it caused people to be willing to learn some new skills and to be able to try, you know, maybe try meditation or try a self-help book or, you know, just other ways and discover that we can be strong, we can handle that. And on the whole, I think it was a big growing experience for people.
Oh, I would agree. And I think a lot of bad relationships were healed. I speak for myself. My first husband, ex-husband, and I didn't have the best relationship for a long time. And during the COVID, crisis, we became friends again. And I think that was one of the most wonderful things that came out of it, not just for myself, well, especially for my children, you know, but I think that it was a lot of good came out of it as well. Don't you think? In our appreciation for relationships that
yes,
we have in our life?
Definitely. So when all of a sudden, one of the kind of funny silver linings of lockdown is that suddenly your spouse, your family, et cetera, they're the only people on the social menu, right?
Yeah.
And it actually, it kind of reminds me of one of the techniques in my book, which is called response prevention. And the idea with that technique is that we train ourselves to stop responding to stressors in the way we always have. Like if, you know, we always used to say, run out the door when we had, I don't know, Bernadette, in your house. I'm just saying, you know, example, if we had a fight with our husband and we used to just say, go to the bar or go to our girlfriends or go for a night on the town. And suddenly that response to the situation is mm-hmm. prevented. because it's no longer available. The good news is it actually forces us to find new ways of responding to those stressors, and we get stronger that way.
I love it. It's about it's the technique kind of frees you. I'm reading this. This technique frees you to stop a compulsive behavior. And I'll give you an example. Yesterday, this happened to me yesterday. I had to run to the store for something. And when I went out the door, I got about a couple blocks away from my house. And I was like, where's my phone? Where's my phone? And I didn't have my phone with me. And I started to freak out. And then I was like, what are you freaking out over? You're only going a mile from the house. You know, the dogs and my youngest daughter was home alone. Everything's going to be fine. Quit OCDing over the phone and just enjoy the peaceful moment that you're in right now. Just walk away from it. Right? That's a good example of response prevention, like taking control of your mind and realizing, that it's not going to be a tragedy here, that you don't have your phone with you.
That's a perfect example, Bernadette. In fact, one of the examples I give in the book is where someone kind of did something similar. Other listeners might relate to this. Obviously, you and I are married, but in the book, there's a client who couldn't stop texting guys. So she was single and she couldn't stop texting guys. And what was worse is that she'd feel most compelled to do this if she felt like the man was ignoring her, which is actually the last man that you need to be texting, right?
Right.
But somehow she had this thing where she couldn't stop. She couldn't resist. And so her form of response prevention, it almost got, sometimes people have to go pretty far because my clients can have very tenacious minds. And sometimes we'll all go to great lengths to satisfy an urge. So when she really couldn't stop wanting to text a man, she would actually FedEx her phone overnight to herself. And then she would get it first thing in the morning so she wouldn't be without it. But literally made it impossible to do that behavior. And as a psychologist and a former yoga teacher, I am so fascinated at that intersection between how we can control our bodies and our minds. So by physically making it impossible for her hands to get on that phone, just like with you and your walk, we discover that our mind actually then goes on to something else. It's very interesting.
It is, and I do remember that in the book, and because I remember thinking I've threatened to throw my phone in the pool before. Like if they text me one more time, I'm going to throw my phone in the pool to stop myself from responding, because it's easy to do, to get caught up in a war like that, a texting war, or just get a response if you're looking for a response. The best thing you can do is just walk away, like you were, kind of just saying or put your phone in a FedEx envelope and send it to yourself. But
Response prevention.
And we're going to talk about all of the tips that you have to help us harness our nervous energy for good. But I'm looking at the clock. Let's go for a quick break so we can come back with a big start. So everyone, stay tuned. More coming up with Dr. Chloe Carmichael. We are talking about her book, Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. And you're listening to One Life Radio. We'll be right back.
She lives and she goes and she lives for me. Says she lives for me, ovation. Who won't motivation? She comes wild and she goes down on me. And I make you smile like a drug for you. Do ever what you wanna do, coming over you. Keep on smiling what we go through. One stop to the rhythm that divides you. And I speak to you like the chorus to the verse. Chop another line like a total with the curse. Coming like a freak show, takes the stage. We give them the game she plays. She say, I want some. Semi-tom kind of life.
Find us on Facebook, hit like, and follow us at One Life Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix. and Dr. Chloe Carmichael. We are live on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. If you're just now joining us, Dr. Carmichael is a licensed clinical psychologist, best known to audiences as Dr. Chloe, and she is the author of the book Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. She also heads a successful private practice in New York City that focuses primarily on relationship issues and stress to help high achievers. You can find her at nervousenergybook.com or on Facebook at Dr. Chloe, PhD. Such an honor to have you with us. Continuing on, Dr. Chloe, talking about your book, Nervous Energy. Okay, so, you know, many of your clients are described as highly successful or high-functioning people. Why do highly successful people seek treatment? You would think that their lives would be magical, right, if they're so successful.
Well, Bernadette, I mean, that sounds true, but on the other hand, as you know, I mean, you're a highly successful person, and, you know, I know you share a lot on your show, which is awesome.
I do.
And, like, you know, you talked a second ago about when your husband and you, like, had the relationship stuff going on, and I think that high-functioning people, like many of your listeners, like, they want to have their best life, and just because they're able to, you know, hold down a job and get through the day, with all due respect, it's not enough, right?
Yeah,
they want more. They want to have joy. They want to have fulfillment. They don't just want somebody in their life. They want a great partner. They don't just want a job. They want a career they like. They don't want to just pop out a kid. They want to be a really good parent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I help people in the book. The reason I called it Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety, is because that very type of person is actually sometimes prone to anxiety, because sometimes they're always saying, well, what's the next step? What could I do? How could I make this better? And then they can start almost chasing their own tail with anxiety about anxiety. And I want them to know that the healthy function of anxiety is actually oftentimes to, like, quote, make it better, you know, to do something productive. So that's why I called the book Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety.
Yeah, no, and I love it. It's a really great book. It really is. There's so much information in it. It's very well laid out, I might add, as well. And it really is. I can tell you put a lot of thought into it. But, you know, I was kind of being facetious when I asked that, because, of course, everybody has problems. And some would tell you the more successful, the more problems, kind of like more money, more problems. Everybody has problems. Everybody has anxiety. But there are certain things that high-functioning people do that make them even more successful, right? Can you give us some examples? I love the ones that are in your book. They're just it's fabulous.
Sure. Well, thank you. Yes, I think so. With high-functioning people, like, a lot of what they do in their minds can be a two-sided coin. So they're really good at just, you know, keeping their eye on the ball and staying focused on something, which is great. Mm-hmm. Until it's not, right? So they can be so, you know, hardcore, tenaciously focused on, say, acing a meeting or getting an A on a test or doing something. But then they reach this tipping point where maybe the meeting's over, or, you know, they've prepared for the test as much as they can, and, you know, now they're just getting crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that situation, I love a technique from the book called the new mental shortlist, where when our mind is just auto-tracking onto something, when we're like a dog with a bone with it, instead of just saying, oh, I've got to stop thinking about that, or I'm ruminating about that, we give ourselves a list of five really good topics to think about instead. And that helps the desire of that healthy part of ourselves that actually wants to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I said the healthy function of anxiety is to stimulate productive behaviors. And so we just need to give ourselves something better to do or something better to think about. So I do think it's a lot of times with, as you said, high functioning people, it's not that they have, quote, serious problems, but they're also always looking for how can they grow, how can they do better, how can they have more.
Yeah, no, I actually thought that the mental shortlist was brilliant, because so many times, I mean, all of us can get into a point where, maybe not all of us, you probably don't because you're so well trained as a clinical psychologist, but a lot of people can ruminate, and they can, you know, I do it sometimes. If I have like a bad show, I'll ruminate about it all day long. And so this is good advice to have a mental shortlist of other things that you can think about to take your mind to distract you from whatever it is that's making you ruminate. But rumination can also be a process, Dr. Carmichael, too, that can be, cathartic, right? Or help you to sort out why
Absolutely.
You feel that way? Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I just want to say, Bernadette, I'm right there with you. You know, we all can kind of go a little bit haywire when we're reviewing something that didn't go well. And just like you said, though, there's a healthy level of doing that, being willing to be that first person to take a constructive criticism, look in the mirror and figure out how you can improve. But then the trick is that when you do realize that you're at that tipping point and you're just ruminating, instead of getting down on yourself and like yelling at yourself or criticizing yourself for ruminating, what I want people to do is to reframe that and to say, you know, I just actually have a really tenacious mind, which is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to make sure that I point that mind on the right thing. And there was a point up until now where, you know, maybe replaying that show in my mind a few times was productive, but I've learned what I need to learn, and now I just need to move on to something else. And that's when the mental shortlist technique can be great, because you've got five really good, juicy, interesting topics that you're going to give yourself to think about instead. But you're absolutely right, Bernadette. Going to the mental shortlist before you had done the work of reviewing what didn't go well and why, mm-hmm. so that you could improve it,
yeah.
Jumping to the mental shortlist and just pivoting off anything unpleasant is not good for you either. We do first need to make sure that we've really done everything we should on that topic, and then you have Dr. Chloe's permission to use the mental shortlist so that you can get yourself onto something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have discovery too. Sometimes it's not your fault. Sometimes it's the other person. Maybe there's just not a good, energy between the two people. It happens, and you're not in the same room. You know, when you're in New York City right now, I'm in Dallas. We can't see one another. Sometimes it just doesn't work out, and it's really nobody's fault. And so those are kind of some of the discoveries that you have when you ruminate like I did or do sometimes like the whole day. And so, you know, it's discovery. But speaking of discovery, you have 9 anxiety tools to help harness nervous energy for good. So let's start. You've already touched on a couple of them. Let's start with the 3-part breath, because I know that is a huge part of the book.
Sure, Bernadette. I would just love to say, though, what you said just a moment ago was so helpful, too, about discovery and that process of reflection. And, you know, when we do become aware of our emotions around things, that can actually shape our insight about what we should be doing with our time, which is actually a different technique in the book. It's called the to-do list with emotions. Oh. But on the topic of the 3-part breath, I actually, to be honest, I would love to just tell people they can see a video of me doing it, because okay. It's a meditation and it lets people do what psychologists call metacognition. So you can think about your own thoughts. And like you said, Bernadette, to do that process of discovery and know what your emotions are. So it was, as you can imagine, hard to describe that on the radio. So I put it on a video for your listeners. They can go and see it for free. They can see it at nervousenergybook.com. They can get that video there, and I will, you know, over video, just take them right through it.
I love it.
At nervousenergybook.com.
Thank you so much for doing that. That's really, really nice. No, I'll be sure to check it out too, because as I was reading it, and I, you know, I've kind of meditated off and on for years, but, you know, I have a lot of nervous energy, and so it's hard for me to slow down and actually do breathing exercises, even though I know it's what I really need to do. So it's a nice reminder, and so I look forward to watching the video. You mentioned a minute ago about the to-do list with emotions. Can we go back to that? What is a to-do list with emotions?
Yeah, so the thing I noticed with a lot of very, you know, busy, productive, successful people is that they can sometimes get almost like a hamster on a wheel with their to-do list, where they're just doing, mm-hmm. doing, but they're not feeling fulfilled and productive about it, or they get into procrastination and they're suddenly burnt out and they can't figure out why. And so what I started doing is going through their to-do list with them and then having us write down, what are the emotions that come up for you when you think about this task? And people were often very surprised. So one example I give in the book is like around the subject of a surgeon that was cleaning her house. And her reaction was that she felt angry. And I was like, well, that's interesting. Why? You know, and it came out that her mother-in-law was living with them and was in the way. And it led to all this other stuff that helped us to discover that she wasn't just lazy. She thought she didn't want to do her housework, mm-hmm. because she was lazy. But then it traced into all this stuff about her mother-in-law. So when we take time to slow down, because high-functioning people, we can be so busy that we forget what's really going on with ourselves around all of these tasks. And so the to-do list with emotions gets people back in touch with it, and they're always afraid it's just going to slow them down or be indulgent. Mm-hmm. And so they're very, very excited to learn that it actually usually increases productivity. Because when we get back in touch with the emotions, we remove the procrastinating, and we actually get more energetic around our tasks.
Well, because we have an understanding. And, you know, that gives you clarity, right? Which gives you energy, good energy, right?
Exactly.
When you figure things out, like, why do I do this? I mean, that's a brilliant example of what we're talking about here today. I'm looking at the clock. We're going to go for a quick break, and we'll be right back. More coming up with Dr. Chloe Carmichael. You guys, she is the author of Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Heart is a bloom, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful
You're listening to One Life Radio. Make sure you check out our podcast and get to know the show at oneliferadio.com.
All right, everyone, are you ready? Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior and Dr. Chloe Carmichael. We are live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. We are continuing our talk about harnessing stress for success, and Dr. Carmichael's book, NervousEnergyBook.com, or on Facebook at Dr. Chloe, PhD. Okay, I really want to get through these 9 anxiety tools, Dr. Chloe. One of the ones that we haven't touched on yet, I don't believe, is a zone of control. Have we covered zone of control yet?
No, ma'am. That's a good one. I'm glad you mentioned the zone of control. That's one of my favorites in the book.
Yeah, mine too. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, sure. So with the zone of control, what we do is we take, you know, it could be anything. In the book, I mention a person who's trying to get ready for a job interview. And we take that thing that has so many little pieces. He was thinking about everything from, you know, the way his suits looked, to relationships he had with the hiring committee, to his job performance. You know, there's so many little pieces of many things in life. And he was just generally stressed. He thought about that interview and just felt overwhelmed with stress. And so what we do with the zone of control is we list out all of those little components. Again, you know, whether it be thoughts about the suits or thoughts about relationships of the interviewees, everything. We just list everything that comes to mind. And then what we do is we go through that list and we divide it into a column of either this is something I actually can control, like I can, you know, get my suit tailored.
Right.
Or this is something I cannot control. Like I cannot, you know, invent a new job history or whatever. And by then dividing it that way, we only give ourselves permission to focus on the things that are in the zone of control. And that way we take that healthy function of anxiety, which again is to stimulate preparation behaviors. That's why we get a little adrenaline and, you know, a little sweaty palms sometimes when we're anxious. Mother Nature's giving us energy. The trick is to make sure we don't waste that energy just, you know, with anxiety thoughts about things we cannot control. We're so much better if we put that energy to good use by only focusing on the stuff that we can control. But most people, including myself, if they have a complex goal, they actually have to divide it up consciously into what can I control and what can I not control. It's like the serenity prayer, except a little bit more methodical.
I love it. I love it. The serenity prayer is one of my favorite as well. So on this list is mind mapping. I love this. Can we talk about mind mapping and what are the benefits of mind mapping?
Yes, yes. So mind mapping, again, is another one of my favorite techniques in the book because we all have such complicated minds that can connect to so many things. So Bernadette, like the example in the book is suppose that you go to lunch and you, the waiter, even his appearance, may just unconsciously remind you of somebody you used to know, and that could trigger off this whole thing in your mind. And you walk away from the lunch and you say, I don't know why, but I'm feeling kind of unrestful about such and such, right? That's because we have so much going on in our unconscious. And so when we do something like mind mapping, it helps us to literally get it all down on paper. So you might start by, you know, saying like, okay, lunch today, you know, and then you might write down, oh, gee, the waiter reminded me of so-and-so. And then you write down like, oh, well, when I think of so-and-so, I feel insecure because, you know, he betrayed me or whatever it was. And right. Then it gives us this insight. People can do that to kind of discover why they feel the way they feel. Or I've even seen people do it, say, when they're planning a wedding and they don't want to get blindsided by little issues that they might have that are going to get triggered by the wedding, but that they just never really stopped to notice before. So people can do those mind maps with big life events or even just kind of as a daily debrief, like you can do a mind map around what happened today and then just pop out like the list of what happened and what, how you feel about it and what it made you think of. It's almost like a self-guided therapy session in a certain way.
No, it is. It's very clever actually. I love it. And I'm reading this. We spoke about clarity a few minutes ago, but I'm reading this from the book that clarity gained from this exercise brings self-awareness and stress relief, as well as increased energy and sense of purpose. And it's true because we do need to, you know, not get too, examine everything we do too closely, but examining certain things that cause you anxiety will only help you to live a better life, right? By understanding where the emotions are coming from.
Well, sure. Like, for example, I've seen clients do it when they have their 30th birthday, too. Because, like, you know, you think about turning 30, and that can bring so many thoughts and so many feelings. And then when people just kind of put them all out on paper, and then they see how things even connect to each other, you know, they're like, oh, well, I am turning 30 made me think about, you know, marriage, and that made me think about, you know, what I'm doing with my religion these days or whatever. And then they see how there's connections between the parts of their brain that they wouldn't have otherwise known. And it's almost like when we get all of the oars rowing in the same direction, the boat goes smoother. When we really understand how all these little pieces of our mind connect, it's easier to go where we want to go.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, one of my favorite of your 9 anxiety tools is worry time. I thought it was brilliant, the suggestion that you put in the book, Nervous Energy. Can we talk about worry time?
Oh, sure, absolutely. So a lot of people get really down on themselves for worrying. They're like, oh, I'm such a worrywart. Why can't I just be in the moment? And it's almost like they start worrying about their worrying, right? And they can get so down on themselves that they forget that, again, the healthy function of that worry is that they're thinking about the future. I frankly have clients who probably should think more about the future, right? But on the other hand, we don't want to just let ourselves get pinged with worry thoughts any old time to the point where we're standing in line at the grocery store while we're, you know, mentally doing our estate planning or whatever. And so with worry time, what we do is we schedule a recurring calendar event. For some people, it's 15 minutes a day. For some people, it's an hour a week, whatever works best with your, you know, mind and lifestyle. And then whenever you have these random thoughts pop into your mind, like, oh, gee, I really should check up on my 401k, or gosh, I wonder what my children are learning in school these days, you know, just whatever pops through your mind. You can just, you don't have to think it through right there in the moment, but you also don't have to just toss it back into the ether and say, oh, I'll think about it later, or don't worry. You put it down in the event details of your calendar event, and then at the appointed time, you look at the list, and you can really give that stuff your undivided attention and evaluate it clearly. And it's actually a better use of your mental energy. Your mind functions better that way, and then it kind of frees you in your day-to-day moments as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm enjoying this, and I know our listeners are as well. June, you're not saying much, but I know you're enjoying this as well. You know, Dr. Chloe, we text each other during the show, you know, for communication because we're not in the same studio. And Junior and everybody out there listening is really enjoying this. Let's talk about, we've got about 5 minutes, response prevention. Let's talk about that as being one of the 9 anxiety tools to help harness nervous energy for good.
Yeah, sure. So response prevention is kind of a classic behavioral technique. So sometimes I work with what's called cognitive behavioral techniques, but response prevention is really purely behavioral. So it's when you're doing a physical behavior that you want to stop. So the example I gave earlier was a woman that kept wanting to text men, right? She just needs to stop that. Or, you know, or like a smoker that wants to light up. They need to maybe throw those cigarettes over a bridge, you know, just get them out of their hands. And so what we do again with that response prevention is we make it literally impossible for ourselves to do it. And you mentioned checking your phone. So that's an interesting one, too. For some people, even just sleeping with their phone in a different room will stop them from obsessively checking their email all night long, for example.
Oh, yeah, and I know people that do that. I never did throw my phone in the pool. I've threatened too many times. Like, I'm going to throw my phone in the pool, but I never really did it because I... thought that would be really dumb. But it did help me to control my response. So
it
on this list,
like cutting off your nose to spite your face, right?
Yeah, I know.
Your like own phone in the pool because somebody else texted you.
Right, I know. That would be like so stupid.
No, but I can understand the urge. And in fact, you know, we've all been the other person who can't stop texting as well, you know, so
yeah.
I can totally get it. That's why we need response prevention, Bernadette. You got it.
Yes, we do. What about thought replacement? Have we covered that? I think we might have touched on it.
No, yeah.
Okay.
Thought replacement is another one of my favorites. So we've all had things in our minds that we know are not good things to say to ourselves, right? Like, you know, I won't go through all the negative, awful things that we could say to ourselves, but we all kind of know what those are. And so suppose that you're trying to learn something new and you always say like, oh, I'm so stupid. Instead of saying that, you would say to yourself something more like, I'm learning new skills and I'm someone who is always chasing a challenge. So it's not surprising that I encounter frustrations because then you're reframing into something truthful and accurate instead of, you know, something like, oh, well, I'm just so stupid. But it's important to know sometimes people get thought replacements confused with affirmations. And I love affirmations too. I'm a former yoga teacher where people like even maybe someone who's very poor would say things like, oh, well, I have flowing financial abundance. Thought replacements are different because they have to be 100% accurate and true. And that is why they're oftentimes more effective for people in some cases. Because when we tell ourselves something aspirational that's not true, our conscious mind knows it, and it's sometimes hard to fully get into it. So with thought replacements, we look at some of those constant negative things we say to ourselves, and we find truly better, more intelligent, and more productive ways to think about the issue. And then we write it down and memorize it and live by it.
I love your book. I loved having you on the show. I hope you'll come back. I'm going to have to kick the field goal. I hate to do it so quick, but I have to or I'm going to miss it. But thank you so much, everyone. I encourage you to get the book, Nervous Energy. Remember, you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.